Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for tuning in. I appreciate that. We're going to talk to Suzanne Muchen a little bit later in the hour. She is the co-host of The Big Payoff. That's a podcast you can hear at WGNradio.com. One of the things we'll talk about is Chelsea Clinton. You know, she kind of found herself in the center of this WikiLeaks email release scandal and maybe revealed a little bit of herself in the way that she might handle, I'm not going to say a political run, but handle herself in the future as well. So we'll talk to Suzanne about that. Also, Andrew Herman will be here from DNA Info talking about openings and closings. There's a Dollar Tree store that is opening, I think it was on the Northwest side. And Andrew wants to talk a little bit about the Dollar Tree stores and how Walmart competes with them and all of that. A little bit later as well, In the Company of Women, a compilation of 100 profiles of women in business, mostly, I think, in the creatives. It's put together by Grace Bonney. She is the woman behind Design Sponge, the daily blog. I don't know if you've seen that, but we will talk to Grace a little bit later in the program as well. This is when we talk to John Najarian about what's going on in Wall Street, and Steve Alexander is joining us as well.
Hi.
Hope to hook up here with John in just a second
Have
or so.
Have you been revealed by WikiLeaks, your emails?
I have not, thank God. How would you do? I would not do very well.
People would be very bored by mine. Nothing salacious in mine, I don't think.
Well, you never know, because we can read them any way we want. That's part of the problem. You know, you talked about the fact that Wall Street sort of has its eyes already, not on this Tuesday, but on next Tuesday.
Yes.
And I would imagine, I mean, do we enter into sort of a stall period here for the next week?
Well, you know, it's interesting because all along, Wall Street had been built in a Hillary Clinton win.
Right.
And as we get closer to the election, I guess, you know, people, they don't like uncertainty on Wall Street. Traders don't. And as we get closer to Tuesday, the uncertainty builds, and now they're starting to hedge their bets on the possibility of a Trump victory.
I read that somewhere they said that the markets were more prepared for a Brexit surprise than they are for a Trump surprise.
Yes, and that's the analogy there. Some of the traders or the analysts are using to explain what might happen if there is a Trump victory. But the interesting thing to look at is that these traders, you know, I don't think in large part they care one way or the other. It's all about how they can make money. So right now they're thinking about how they can hedge for to take advantage of the sell-off that's expected if Trump wins.
So it's not necessarily, their activities aren't necessarily a sign of good times or bad times to come. It's whether or not they can turn a profit on it.
Yes.
Interesting, too. I know Mark Cuban was on CNBC earlier today. Did you see any of that?
Some of it, yes.
Well, okay, first of all, if Mark Cuban's speaking, he is a staunch Hillary Clinton supporter, so I tend to put it at a pretty heavy discount.
He wasn't from the beginning, though. He actually gave, according to his interview today, gave Trump a chance at the beginning because he was, you know, he's ready to shake it up, something different.
Right, and but now he says that the Trump victory would be terrible for Wall Street.
Yes, he did, yeah.
And was he challenged on that, or did you just kind of get to say whatever you want?
No, I think he was able to say, he was the guest, he could say whatever he wanted. There is another investor named Peter Thiel who's been promoting Trump and supporting Trump.
He's the PayPal guy, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he's come under fire for that.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Okay, so we'll just wait to see what happens. Tell me also about ADM had an interesting sort of take. I think they had a conference call today. Was it today on their third quarter profits?
I missed it. I don't know.
They're talking about the fact, though, that with this bumper crop that we're expecting, that that's going to be very good news for companies like ADM and Cargill.
Well, for one reason is because the price of these commodities, corn and soybeans, across the Iowa, Indiana, you know, Illinois farm belt are low.
Right.
They're cheap. And so the processors get these products at a very low price. Bumper crops, huge crops available. The farmer's only salvation is that their yield per acre is much higher than what it has been in previous years. But the price per bushel is way down.
Let me ask you a question that you might not know the answer to,
okay.
But does
it'll a be the first time?
Oh no, that's fine. You know almost all of them. Does a processor make a different amount of money on a higher price commodity than it would at a lower price? And you know, in other words,
sure.
If the price of corn is much lower, are they bringing in less money, or is it the same?
Well, no, and they make more money because they're paying less to produce the product that they sell for the same price that they would sell it regardless of whether their input price is lower or higher.
I see, right, because they're not just processing it, they're buying the product.
Right.
All right, very good. Well, you gave us a lot to think about there, Steve Alexander, and okay. You didn't know the answer. I appreciate it.
Back to the WikiLeaks now. I'm anxious to see what Chelsea said.
We'll talk to Suzanne Mushin about that a little bit later. I don't know how revealing it is, but... it opened up a couple of eyes. We're going to talk to John Najarian right now. John, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hey, great to be with you, Stephen. Thank you for being patient.
Okay, we're going to play a little catch-up here, but we were talking about the fact that maybe Wall Street is just kind of treading water until next Tuesday's election. I mean, is that the way you see things?
Well, yeah. A lot of folks were saying it wasn't similar to Brexit. And I've kind of said all along that I recognize the significant difference, which is that we, of course, have 50 states. Everybody has an electoral vote, as well as, of course, the popular vote. And the popular vote doesn't get the president elected.
Right.
So it's not really the same as Brexit, which was just a straight popular vote. However, the reaction could be very similar. It could be that if indeed the polls are right and Mr. Trump has overtaken Ms. Clinton, I guess even the Washington Post is saying that now. If that holds into next week, and if it is the electoral win, not just a popular vote, then I think the markets will be nervous and probably sell off. But it might be just as nice a buying opportunity as it was when Brexit occurred.
Now, so we've had, is it the ABC Washington Post poll, right, that puts Trump up one? But it's kind of interesting because...
Yes,
that one's been wild because it said earlier that Clinton was up 12 a few weeks ago. Other polls have
yep.
shown very little movement in the national standings.
Right.
And even if he, as you sort of alluded to, he has a better chance of winning the national vote total. Right now, the electoral map still doesn't look very good for him.
Yeah, that's contributing to volatility in the markets because people can't really square the idea that you could have even depending on how Utah goes, because now Utah, even though it's minor number of electoral votes, could keep either of the two candidates out, depending, you know, how the rest of the states swing. So it's I think, injected even more uncertainty and volatility. That's kind of our bailiwick, because that's what we do, is we try to harness the good that comes from volatility and use it to the client's benefit.
All right,
but
Evan.
I think we're going to see a lot of that, Stephen, into the election next week.
Evan McMullen for president, right? He is the independent candidate, the conservative running in Utah. He is Mormon, has a great Utah background. So the theory is, and you just kind of mentioned it, I think, he could win Utah. He generally is a Republican. He's conservative. If he wins Utah and neither the other two candidates secure the 270 electoral votes, which could be caused by his victory in Utah, it would then go to the House, and House conservatives might be more inclined to choose Evan McMullen as the next president than Donald Trump. So there you go, Evan McMullen for president.
Can you believe it? I mean, I know we can come up with wild scenarios, and that is certainly one of them, but also one of the reasons why we are witnessing this dramatic surge, about a 40% surge in the last week in the volatility of the S&P 500 has gone up by 40%
wow.
in the last week.
John Najarian, I will believe anything this fall. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephen.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Twelve twenty-three. The Business Lunch on 720 WG. And Andrew Herman is here. He's an editor at DNA Info Chicago. And we talk about openings and closings around the city and things like that. Andrew, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hey, man.
And hey, man.
See, I say that because we're going to talk about hippies. So.
Yeah, I know. And I told you we were going to do that first. But before we do, you know, one of the reasons I like hanging out with you is you're so observant. Because you picked up on something that only a trained journalistic eye would be able to pick up on.
Like a 30-foot tall Abe Lincoln right outside the windows here?
I had no idea. I turned around. So it's like a Marilyn Monroe type statue, and it's Abraham Lincoln going up?
Yeah, so it's Abraham Lincoln, and then I think there's a second figure, and the second figure is reading the Constitution.
Oh, well, that's something no one ever does anymore.
Well, I was leaving the DNA Info newsroom, and I heard the downtown reporter putting together a story on it. So when I get back there, I'll figure out exactly the details. But yeah, there's a lot of activity over there.
All right, log on to DNAinfo.com later today to find out about Abraham. Now let's go to the head shops of Old Town.
Okay. All right. So 1610 North Wells, it was the Adobe Grill for a few years. There was a fire last year, and it ruined the building, but it is an important, iconic landmark, hippie landmark in Chicago. And it was the it marked the beginning or the opening of Piper's Alley, which in the 1960s and 70s was sort of a counterculture area.
So this is the second city fire you're talking about, right?
Well, this is a little bit down from
right, but it's the fire.
Yeah, it's right around closing, there.
Right, and
yeah,
and so it's the building. You'd recognize the building. It's got that sort of witch's hat atop of the spire,
yeah.
Turret. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And so it was badly damaged in the fire, and they're trying to save it, or they're not trying to save it.
So this building was built in the late 1800s, and so it's a pretty old building to start out with, but the fire has kind of destroyed it. The owner has taken out a demolition permit, and the preservationists are alarmed, as preservationists usually are. but for this, being a fan of the counterculture, right. I'm with them on this one.
Yeah.
They see this as a landmark, and they're trying to save, as you say, that witch's hat turret in the facade, because back in the good old hippie dippy days of the 60s and 70s, Old Town was sort of ground zero for the counterculture.
Do you understand what Piper's Alley really, the geography of it? Because there's a...
It's not there anymore.
It was like a gangway, a little alleyway?
Okay. There was a gangway, and there was storefronts inside the gangway. So there was like a... there was Charlie's General Store, the Sweet Tooth Candy Shop, a candle store. Of course, you need a candle if you're a hippie, right?
Although in the 70s, we all had our own candle-making machines.
It had a clothing store, the Male M1 Shop, which sold mod clothes, because you had to have mod clothes.
Elephant bells.
And so it's it's somewhat significant, and so the preservationists, and I don't mean to make fun of them. I support them in everything
they
do.
They have reason to be alarmed, generally.
Yeah,
so
the older I get, the more I like history, so I'm all for them.
The more history you grew up with, too.
Yeah.
Let's go to Portage Park real mm-hmm. quick. There's a Dollar Tree store there, and they just want to talk about, are these endangered, or what's the story?
Well, so they're moving into an empty fruit market at 4118 North Cicero, and like you say, it's in Portage Park on the northwest side, and it's sort of reflective of this... huge growth that these dollar stores have had for the last 5 years or so. They had like 50% increase in revenues between 2010 to 2015, primarily driven by grocery sales. Because you see
they
sell a lot of food in there now, and they're often in locations where there's not a grocery store around them. But they sort of hit some headwinds over the summertime. The presidents of Dollar General and Dollar Tree, their revenues fell short, and they were asked by analysts what's going on there. And they said, times are getting tougher for the working poor, which is their primary customers.
Usually you think the busier they are, the more working poor there are.
Yeah. So they're saying what's hitting the working poor these days are rising rents, healthcare costs. You know, they have to buy their own insurance now.
Right,
Obamacare
right.
has given them the opportunity to do it. And if they avail themselves of that, then they have to pay for it themselves. And some states have changed food stamp regulations, and they're pushing people off of food stamps. And people would use food stamps. They're not called food stamps anymore, but they would use these government vouchers to buy food at dollar stores. So the dollar stores are competing with all that, and Walmart, which has been cutting their food costs dramatically in order to drive people out of the industry.
So that's going on in Portage Park. We at least have one expanding a little bit.
Right, right.
Andrew Herman, nice to talk to you. Thanks for coming by.
Okay.
And give Abraham our best as you walk past him there on the Michigan Avenue.
And I will check the website to see what's happening.
Let me know. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's got to stop.
No, never, never, never.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. And if there is a Suzanne or Sue or Susie music, it must mean Suzanne Mushin is in the studio. the co-host of The Big Payoff at WGNplus.com. Welcome back.
Thanks, Steve.
Let's take an Uber ride.
Let's.
So this
you want to be the driver or the passenger?
I want to be the passenger because I'll get picked up and be taken directly to my spot.
Exactly, and I'll get a long roundabout route.
So there's, what, eight people, scientists or academics or whatever, mm-hmm. did this survey. They took 1,500 rides?
Yes.
In Seattle and Boston.
Right, so this is MIT, Stanford, and Washington University.
And what did they find?
So the results aren't surprising. They're just depressing, right? So some of the results were that there was twice as likely a cancellation for African-American riders as there was for white, meaning that the Uber driver would accept the ride, and then once the name popped up, if it sounded like an African-American name...
Say, I'm busy. I can't do it.
They'd cancel the trip. Okay. Two times as likely. There was a lot of evidence that women were being taken on these roundabout routes and that there was an enormous amount of flirtation.
Right. I know of a guy who talks about how many dates he's gotten out of being an Uber driver.
Right.
Let me put it that way.
I mean, right. And maybe even, and maybe even a little more.
And I think they were willing dates. I mean, there's nothing.
Yeah, right.
I mean, but the fourth time you go around the block.
Exactly.
It's like, no.
Exactly. And the other thing about this study that I found so interesting was they said initially Lyft looked better than Uber.
Right.
But when they really went into it and tried to figure out why, what they realize is with Lyft, your picture comes up so the driver sees who you are before they accept it.
So if they're looking at someone who they don't want to pick up, they just never respond.
Right. So they don't look as bad because actually they're pre-screening, which is bad.
Now, if I don't use Uber very often. I've only used it a few times. But aren't there also rider profiles?
There are. So you can get bad marks.
Or you can get good marks.
Good marks, right. I mean, if you're not picking up someone because they have like a 2-star rating or something like that, that I get. Why would you want to invite into your car somebody who's got a bad rating? But this wasn't evidence of that. It was really about names sounding African-American and women.
What do Uber and Lyft say about this?
So they said that they are, of course, not in favor of anything that's discriminatory, blah, blah, blah. And they also say they are making efforts to go into neighborhoods that have not previously been served by cabs. I believe that.
I think that's very true. I mean,
totally.
They've made a very public effort here.
They really have. So I don't think this is an institutionalized issue. Part of it, unfortunately, is probably human nature. You know, we have biases.
And that's always been the rap on cab drivers.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
I wonder if there's a competition between Uber and cab driver. We don't want to have
that. We don't want to go there. What I will say is that last week I had the best Uber ride of my life.
Really?
So I'm picked up by a female driver, which is not neither here nor there other than it's just unusual. Like, oh, I've got a lady driver. Beautifully pristine car. Snickers in the back seat like a little bucket.
You tweeted about this.
Yes.
Okay.
And her playlist was impeccable. It was like Michael Jackson, Madonna, Wham. It was straight out of our childhood, like out of the 90s. Well, mine at least.
It was straight out of my nightmares. That's what that was. So wait,
it was the best ride.
Did you ask
ever.
Her? Did you ask her about the Snickers bars and all of that at all? Did you?
I did say, is this something for Halloween? Or she's like, no, I always have them here. She, and a bottle of water.
She made it sound as if she provides them though?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a kid out of Deerfield who might have gone to high school with my son.
Uh-huh.
Who created a company where he's placing these little goodie
so smart
barrels in Uber cars.
So smart. And as an upsell? So like I get in the car, or is it just as a customer service bonus?
I think he's not selling the items in the car. I'm not sure where the money's being transacted. He's
right.
going to the products, they're providing the products. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure how
far along it was, but I remember Noah saying something like he had a buddy who had that idea.
It's a cool idea. The only thing I would say is because you can't really request an Uber driver, if you have that kind of a great experience, it's not as if that would lead to future recommendations of that driver because it's just not how it works.
Okay, let's go on to WikiLeaks now.
Oh, yeah, man.
And so this is a great sort of lesson in the WikiLeaks thing. Chelsea Clinton is central in some of the latest dumps.
Yes.
Which were stolen by the Russians.
For sure.
Let's not forget that. I think that's amazing that that's not a bigger part of what we're talking about right now.
It is right here. You and I just laid it out
there. We did. Okay. So But in the first one, she was being complained about as a spoiled brat.
Right.
In a dump maybe 10 days ago.
Yeah.
And in the one that came out more recently, we're learning about why the guy who called her a spoiled brat had his nose out of joint,
exactly.
Right? Exactly. What are we learning about Chelsea Clinton?
So these emails paint a picture, in my read of them, of actually what I think of Chelsea Clinton in the world. I think that she is... a diplomat. I think she's probably the child of these two unbelievably powerful and dysfunctional parents, and therefore is always trying to sort of keep things even keeled. I think she is the good girl, the good daughter, trying to be both loyal to her parents and also protective of them. And I think she really felt that it was her job to go in there and kind of clean house.
And so she went in and she started looking at what this guy... Is it, it's not Band, it's Tinio is the company.
Yes.
Is it Doug Band?
No.
That's another aide in trouble.
But
he's the guy who bragged about Clinton Inc.
Yes.
And about and how he was getting donations for the foundation and then also securing speaking engagements for Bill Clinton.
Bad idea.
Little hinky.
Little, exactly. And from Chelsea's point of view, as opposed to saying, oh, that's cool. Great, more of that. She really took him on. And I think that what's interesting about what this reveals about Chelsea, Steve, you have a daughter. I have a daughter. You have sons. You have a son. I have sons. It's a very daughter-like image of a girl. So when you see, for example, the Trump boys, they're defending their dad. They're like ready to sort of step in and be his surrogate.
Right.
Whereas I think that for a daughter, she is a little bit more of the peacekeeper, trying to make everybody somehow feel a little
bit
better. It's
interesting you brought up the Trumps because I don't see Ivanka that way. I think
But I think she's been less that role. When you need a dog fight after a Trump issue, they send in the boys. They send in you have not heard her speak about the ex.
Oh, I think she's defended some of it.
Not like the boys.
I mean, I do agree with your point in a larger sense. I mean, I can see my daughter saying, hey, come on, we need to do this, or what's this about? Right.
And being a bit more of the kind of like, mom, dad, let me handle this.
Well, it is interesting to see her as this sort of the third member of the triangle and trying to keep it all balanced.
And trying to do the right thing. I mean, for what these emails could have shown about her, I actually think she comes off pretty, if you really read them, she comes off well.
She comes off better than her parents do.
Yes.
And not behaving at the expense of her parents.
Right.
So she comes off doing well trying to protect her parents.
She does.
Suzanne Muchin, check out more of her from The Big Payoff at WGNplus.com. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. 12:51, it's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for tuning in. Hey, do you ever check out the blog Design Sponge? Grace Bonney is the force behind that. I know on Twitter she's got 500,000 followers, so that's not too shabby. And a new book called In the Company of Women. She joins us on a phone line now. Grace, welcome to the Business Lunch. You bet. So I'm interested. I'm always interested in the paths we take and the way we sometimes create or recreate. You kind of started as someone who wanted to be a journalist and found your way out of school as someone who's writing about design. How did that happen?
It's a funny, circuitous path, but it all kind of makes sense to me looking backwards now. I actually was a journalism major for the first 2 years of college and then switched to fine art. And then ended up starting my blog Design Sponge as a way to just talk about things that I really enjoyed in the art community. And it really grew into something that I couldn't have anticipated becoming a much bigger job. But I'm so happy that it did.
The thing you leave out is the fact that the traditional magazines that you might have been writing for started to go away and you needed to find another outlet for yourself.
Absolutely. I started Design Sponge a few years before I started writing for magazines, and I got a dream job at House and Garden magazine back in, I believe, 2006, and then 2 years later, it closed, and I never could have anticipated that. I thought that print was this very safe place, and then I went to two or three other magazines, and they all closed, and at that moment, I think around 2008, I realized, okay, the blog is going to have to make work, so it became a much more serious.
And so here comes then the book In the Company of Women, which is a book of heft. It's a beautiful thing. And as I understand it, you set out maybe writing a DIY book that turned into this series of profiles of women in the arts and business. How did that transformation take place?
It was fast and furious one, but one that I'm so happy that happened. I was contracted to write a do-it-yourself book full of how-to projects for the home, and I just, my heart wasn't in it. And so I was prepared to give my advance back and was speaking with my wife and realized that I really wanted to write this book that was sort of about visibility and women in business. And so we wrote a sort of new pitch and sent it in with the offer to give my advance back or to write this new book. And thankfully, my publisher was game, but said, you have the same deadline. So the whole thing came together in 2 months.
You went on a big, fat road trip, right?
I did. It was the best summer vacation ever.
So some of the women you've run across, I mean, there are names that are familiar to me. One of my favorites is an old friend, Nikki Giovanni, the poet. Who's
she's
great,
a favorite of mine.
Yeah. And I remember we talked years ago, and maybe you spoke with her as well, about her love for Tupac and poetry and the poetry of the streets and things such as that. What did you learn from her?
From Nikki, I have learned since, I mean, I've been reading her poetry for as long as I can remember, and I went to college in Virginia where she taught, and I have just followed her. And what I've loved most about her was the way that she proudly stands up for and owns her own voice.
Yeah.
She is never apologetic about her opinions or her feelings. And at a very young age, that really reminded me and inspired me to just be proud of the things that I felt and had opinions about. And so getting to meet her in person and hear her stories about life and work was just, it'll be the highlight of my life, I'm very sure.
She's a woman who brings a spark to the people she talks to.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no way you can either read or listen to Nikki and not come away feeling more confident and more strong in just in everything.
Yeah. So that's Nikki Giovanni, one of the 100 that Grace Bonney talks to. I want to talk to you as well because you reference a quote from Marion Wright Edelman, which I think maybe speaks to the mission of this book. You can't be what you can't see. How does that inform this book in the company of women?
Well, for me, that quote is all about the power of visibility and how a lack of it can sometimes sort of let someone not know all of the options that exist for them. And in the art and design community, I do run into so many people who didn't even know their careers were options because there weren't female role models for them in that field. And I'm someone who has access to all of those people, and I don't know the answers to all of the challenges people will face in work, but I certainly know how to put the right people in front of them. So I wanted to create a book where we would illustrate as many different paths to business and to success and creativity as possible. So that's kind of what inspired this, was just wanting to make all of these women as visible as possible.
I wonder if you consider yourself part of the creative community or consider yourself a witness to it, because I think you're probably part of it. But people in your position sometimes don't give themselves credit for that, and they don't think they're fully ingrained in the art community. Rather, they're just watching it. Is that an odd question?
No, not at all. That's something that has sort of, in the beginning, I think, plagued me in the beginning of my career. I felt very self-conscious about not being a maker or a creative of some sort. But over the past decade of running my site, I've really come to own my place in the community, and I think that I'm someone who connects people and provides resources. And while that may not be, you know, producing a painting or a sculpture, it is a very valuable part and an important part of the creative community. And so I'm really proud to have the role I have, and that's a discussion I've been having on the book tour that I'm on right now, where we've just kind of been reaffirming to people who perhaps aren't makers or running their own creative businesses, but you still have a role and an important place in this community if you want it.
Do you give yourself time to, or give yourself credit for the influence you have? I mean, do you ever step back and say, wow, look what I've built here, and look at the influence I'm having on people?
No.
Well, let's do it. Let's do it together right now, Grace. Take a moment. No, I think it's probably very true.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I am very, very proud of this book. It feels to me like the most sort of the project that aligns the most deeply with my sort of core values and goals. And so for me, this book being received in the world the way that I hoped it would has meant so much to me. And it means that I get to talk about so many of the deeper issues that are underneath design and art that I care so much about. So I'm just glad to be able to sort of create a book. And then it's a book tour, these moments and these spaces where women can be together and connect and can have safe spaces to talk openly and vulnerably about just some of the bigger issues that face all of us running businesses.
Well, it is a beautiful book, and it's a book with some heft. And I say that because it sort of tells you when you're holding it that you're holding something. I mean, there's something real there. Grace Bonney, it was great to talk to you. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
The name of the book, again, In the Company of Women. This is The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.